Good evening, everyone, and welcome to our Wednesday night class. It's very nice to have visitors here. Well, Brother Matt has a lot to cover this evening, so we're not going to have a reading, and so I'll hand it over to Matt.
Thanks for that, Tim. Yes, I have got quite a task tonight, so thank you. I hope you're all strapped in. And thanks for Brother James Vargibos for coming tonight. Good to see the dedication despite the State of Origin being on tonight, of course. Thank you, Brother James. Now, thanks also to Mum and Dad for driving 1,000 kilometres to be here tonight. Wonderful to see you. We're just going to pick up pretty much where we left off last time. And for those of you who weren't here, I'm sorry that you weren't here. You can hear about it from others, or maybe, I don't know if it's, I suppose it's taped, you can get it that way, but we essentially come to the point in time of this story between the four characters that we're dealing with, which is Jacob, Leah, Rachel and Laban. Fantastic story. Here's the family in Syria that Jacob comes and runs into. Of course, they're not their real faces. Sorry. I'm sorry about that, if I've disappointed anyone. But in chapter 29, we see the irony of God's teaching at play. Amazing. We find that God teaches Jacob his first big lesson. He thought that he was marrying Rachel. When he woke up the next day, who was there?
Leah. And what do you think happened? Shock horror happened, didn't it? All sorts of things happened. Anyway, in verse 25, and this is the irony of it, Jacob comes running up to Laban and says, "You've deceived me." Wow. "You've deceived me," verse 25 of chapter 29. And what does this Laban, I can imagine he'd have a kind of a smirk on his face almost when he replies. In verse 26, you have a look at what he says. He says this, "It must not be done in our country to marry the younger before the firstborn." Notice that. Could have just said, you know, "We don't do that here. We don't marry the younger before the older." But he didn't do that, did he? He said the firstborn. Do you know why? Because he knows all about Jacob. He knows all about how he's got this great wealth and how he went about getting it. Now, if that wasn't ringing alarm bells in Jacob's head, I don't know what was. And God, if God thinks that we need a lesson in some specific way, he gives us that lesson. And I guess the challenge for us isn't so much whether it's poetic or it's, you know, the challenge for us, just as it was for Jacob, is was he able to be taught that lesson? Are we able to be taught a lesson? And it takes a lot for someone to learn a lesson. And what's the lesson here for Jacob? Well, here's Laban saying, "You know what? Don't tell me I've deceived you." Once deceived and used deception. And guess what? I know about it. And the world knows about it. And you know, when I was doing this, I couldn't help but think, and I'm going to ask you the same question I sort of asked myself. Have you ever been in a situation where your actions or something you did or said, you know, it was wrong. It really clearly was wrong. And it resulted in a non-believer rubbing it in a little bit. You ever had that? You know, I can see a few nods, right? I'm the same. It has happened to me many times. And every time I think, "Oh, what did I do that for?" You know the thing. You ever heard it said, "Hang on, aren't you a Christian dolphin or something? You know, don't you believe in the Bible?" Well, you wouldn't normally say that, would you? Or you wouldn't normally do or go there. Have you ever had that? Jacob's right there, right now. You see that? And the worst part about it, I mean, how does that make you feel? It makes you feel embarrassed. It makes you feel shame. It's a hard lesson. You know why it's a hard lesson? Because not only are we a little bit embarrassed, yeah, and you see them next time, whatever. The worst thing is, it gives people that are non-believers an excuse to mock. To mock, and most importantly, to mock God. It's a big lesson, isn't it? And Jacob's in this lesson. See, so what was wrong with the deception that Jacob and his mother did? What was so wrong with it? I mean, Jacob and Rebekah worked together, they deceived. They did it because they thought, with all the love of the truth, that they needed to do it. That the situation was so extreme that God really needed their help. And that's what was wrong with it, wasn't it? There was no other fault, was there? Their motive was clear. It was good. Their love of the truth was good. Nothing wrong with their faith. The fault in them was a Judaistic principle which says, unless I help God, he will never get me into the kingdom. But Jacob needed to learn, just like we do, that God had already promised Jacob the kingdom. Just needed to believe it and believe that God was able to get him there. And so you can just imagine after this scene of him waking up next to Leah, oh, and this great scene erupts, you know, this, oh, what have you done to me? There's so many questions, and we talked about it some, you know, for a while after the last class. I'm not going to go through all those questions, but there are so many questions that are raised, and the Bible doesn't exactly tell us the answers to some of those questions. But we can say this much. What must have been that following week like? Pretty awkward, huh? Did Jacob have a choice to do what he did next? Because he went on then, didn't he, to negotiate what he should do about the one that he loved. He did have a choice, and we always have a choice. In fact, it's interesting, isn't it, that Leviticus 18 picks up, almost citing this exact example. Leviticus 18 says, neither shalt thou take a wife of her sister to vex her, to uncover her nakedness beside the other in her lifetime. Because that was written later, wasn't it? But it's interesting, isn't it? This is almost the exact scene here that it's describing. Jacob did have, he did have a choice. But, of course, it says that he loved Rachel more than he loved Leah. So he continued on. Do you know what? If he hadn't have done that, well, who knows what would have happened. But I'm certain that this next chapter would have been a little bit different. And certainly, you can imagine that the next 7 years of payment for the one that he loved wouldn't have flown by like one day, as the first 7 years did. And meanwhile, there's Laban sitting back. You can just see him sitting back, comfortable under his palm tree, sitting back in his squatter chair, maybe with a nice long tobacco pipe smouldering away, going, I got rid of both of them. And I've still got Jacob for another 7 years to make me even richer. That was the type of man he was. If you don't believe it, we're going to see a bit more about him tonight. Well, now we come to the struggle. A struggle. Daily struggle in the household. And that's what it became. And you know what? This is when we really see real characters come out. Because it's not until people are put under immense pressure before we really see who they are. And if you recall from last week, we talked about how God's developing us. He's not interested in all the periphery. He's not interested in the things we have. He's not interested in how healthy we are even. He is interested in one thing, and that is the development of our inner man, of what's going on in here. And it's not until people are put under pressure before we really know who people really are, which is why we go through the struggles we do in life. And so we come to this in the last part of chapter 29, the last five verses, in fact. And I want you to notice, we're going to talk about Leah, first of all. And now we're going to find a little bit about these two women, who they really were under pressure. And partly we're going to find out that it is in the naming of their children, but not just the naming of their children. The names were significant, but probably more so in their thoughts as they directed them through these verses. And I'll try and help you through this as we go through it. But first of all, I want to point out in verse 31, it says, and when the Lord saw that Leah was hated, the word there for hated means not preferred, he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. So it's telling us something. It's telling us that God's actually involved in this situation, actually directly involved in it, because he's chosen to open the womb of one and let the other one be barren. So remember we talked about God's invisible hand at work here? Why would he do that? Why would he choose to do that? Well, because following that event is when we start to see how people's characters are and what they learn from that. Because God wants us to learn from what we do and what others do. He wants us to look back inwardly and see if we can do anything better. And so now let's look at the next few verses, and we'll look at the first four children. So there's a household which is struggling at the moment. It's shattered almost. The first four. Well, verse 32, it tells us that Leah has a baby boy and calls him Reuben, which means, see, a son. But look at what she says, and this is perhaps even more telling of her mind at this stage. Surely Yahweh hath looked upon my affliction, and now therefore my husband will love me. She rightly attributes her son to the two loves of her life. Firstly, it's the Lord, which is the word for Yahweh, and Jacob. But you see, Jacob didn't love her. She has a second boy in verse 33. Simeon means hearing. And what does she say? Because Yahweh hath heard that I was hated, he hath given me a son. And did you notice that? What happened? She now makes no mention of Jacob at all. She has thanked the one who has shown her love, Yahweh. And she uses his proper name. And she's kind of resigned to the fact that Jacob has no interest in her. And her mind is comforted, perhaps, in the fact that Yahweh is still with her. And this girl, you can kind of start to see, she's got a spiritual mind. She's a bit of a thinker. She has a little bit of depth to her. She might have termed as weak eyes, but there's something about her. And soon we find out that she is indeed a very different girl to her sister. Not only in a physical sense, but also in a spiritual sense. So she then has another child in verse 34, and she calls the boy Levi, which means to be joined. But you can kind of get a sense in this verse of the type of life she must have had at this time, point in time. The amount of pressure that must have been on her, the daily struggle that must be continuing to drain her from her physical and mental strength. Now this time, she says, will my husband be joined unto me, because I have borne him three sons. Do you see what happened in that verse? Unfortunately, perhaps not one of her better moments. She didn't remember the one who loved her. Yahweh. But Yahweh loves us, brothers and sisters, even though others may not. Jacob didn't show that love to Leah at this point in time. Verse 35, Leah has a fourth boy, names him Judah, which means praise. And now will I praise Yahweh, she says. And it's through this line of hers that eventually produces the king of the world. But did this make Jacob finally love her? Four sons? Surely. No. Not at all. Now, before we move on to the next chapter, which is where we really want to have a closer look at Rachel, I just want to consider this one thing. In those four verses that I just went through, can anybody tell me anywhere in those four verses that there is any mention of Rachel at all? And don't come up with the amplified version. That's still not going to help you. Because it doesn't. It doesn't say anything about Rachel. There's no inference towards Rachel or anything. So now, let's just have a look. I'm going to actually put this one up for those who would like to take some notes down. I'm not going to talk about it apart from say that there's an interesting correlation between the words of Leah in those verses and the words of Mary, which is quite interesting to have a look at. There's some very, very interesting links and similarities. We know Mary was a very spiritual girl. So now let's have a look at Rachel. Who was Rachel? When Rachel saw, verse 1, now, you know, when we look at Rachel, we get a raw look at Rachel. Very raw. Like an open book. And do you know what? For all the beauty of Rachel, she's actually ugly. Might sound funny, but she's ugly at the moment. The way that God looks at people in our heart, she's ugly. Isn't that ironic? You know, she was beautiful and well-favoured, but here we start to see who she really was. Look at what is recorded here. When Rachel saw that she bare Jacob no children, Rachel, what does it say? Envied her sister and said to Jacob, "Give me children, else I die." Different girl, huh? Okay, different circumstances, understand, but a different girl. Now, what do you think Jacob thought of that? Well, for the first time, we see Jacob's anger in verse 2 coming up saying, you know, back off. Who am I? I'm not the one, you know, I'm not in control. So he starts to see it as well. So look at verse 3. So look what Rachel decides to do. And this is interesting. She changes the tactics a bit. Knowing that it's obviously wasn't Jacob's fault, but it was really her that couldn't bear children. And so she changes the game. She changes the game and takes Bilhah, her maid, and that she may bear children upon my knee. It's an interesting expression, that. It's actually, in a nutshell, it's the same as today adopting someone, except it's a little different because you're actually choosing the mother and the father. So what happened, though, was when the baby was born, the first thing they would do was they put the baby on the knee of the one who owns it. So that's why that expression's there. That she may bear children on my knee. And that baby becomes hers and not the one who actually naturally gave birth to it. So it's kind of like adoption, isn't it? Well, Bilhah has a son. Let's have a look. Bilhah has a son, verse 5 to 6. Dan, judgment, is what Dan means. Now look at where Rachel's mind was. Verse 6, God, using the word for God being Elohim, not Yahweh, hath judged me. But did you see the difference here compared to Leah? Leah uses the Yahweh word, Rachel uses the Elohim word. And I believe this is trying to tell us that they were at different levels, these two girls, different levels of spirituality, of understanding of God. She doesn't even use the Yahweh name. She doesn't know him. In fact, she only ever uses the Yahweh name once. And we'll find out later. The word Dan means judgment or vindicated. And she saw this boy, which really had nothing to do with her apart from the fact that she endorsed it, a bit like Sarah did with Hagar. Rachel felt that finally she had been vindicated. Finally there was a boy in her camp. But can you see her character? You almost can taste the venom, because it was directed at her sister. And in verse 7 and 8, she has another child, Bilhah. And this is interesting, this one. Bilhah has a second boy named Naphtali, which means wrestling. Listen to what Rachel says. With great wrestlings have I wrestled with my sister, and I've prevailed. She hasn't even had a child yet, naturally. It's all about her struggle with her sister, isn't it? It's all about her. You know, it's interesting. I've put on there a couple of... I'm not going to deal with all of these as they come up on the screen, but you're welcome to take the notes down. But if you compare those two words for wrestle or wrestled, they're completely different. The one that Jacob uses when he held on to that angel, remember that? Very different words. The one that Rachel uses is full of venom. It's a very unsavoury word. And that's what she had in her mind towards her sister at this point in time. You know what? When you start talking like this to other people, what's the natural thing that happens? It drags the other person down. It's very rare for it to go the other way. And you know what? That's exactly what happens here between these two sisters. And I'll show you this slide here as a comparison. Because later when Leah has... more children. Look at all the I, me, my's in there. There's very little talk about Yahweh. It actually starts to drag the whole household down. Can you see how that's happening with this whole family? The household is being dragged lower and lower, down and down. And so we come across to Leah. What has she decided? Oh, well, if you're going to fight that way, I'm going to fight that way. Poor Jacob. Where's he? What's he doing about all of this? You know, he's now got three wives, and he's about to get a fourth one. So Leah says, Jacob, marry Zilpah, because at this point in time, Leah stopped bearing children. Interesting, isn't it? Maybe that was just to test her. What are you going to do now? You can't have children. It's all right for your sister to not have children. See how she handles it. What about you, Leah? How are you going to handle it if you can't have children? And all of a sudden, Leah ends up going in a similar direction to her sister. Well, come and marry Zilpah, and she will bear children for me on my knee. So who does she have? Gad, a troop. Still not directed at her sister Rachel, but there's no mention of Jacob or God. It's all about self. It's all becoming a selfish act. And then she has another child, Asher. Happiness. Happy am I. The daughters will call me blessed. Still no thoughts around Yahweh at this point in time. And then, of course, Leah is blessed again. She's able to have more children under interesting circumstances. And this is really where I see this whole battle or struggle in the household coming to a complete bottom. It's just about to bottom out. So now we've got this interesting episode where Reuben, the oldest boy, in verse 14, he comes in from the field and he brings with him a mandrake. I don't know if anyone knows what a mandrake is. Been watching Harry Potter movies? No? I don't think it's quite the same as that. Although there is a legend that they used to speak when they ripped them out of the ground and all this sort of stuff. But what's that? I'm only joking. Yeah, I think it is. Well, let's just push ahead. It's called the love apple. Let's push ahead. That's all the research I can get on the mandrake for real. I mean, there's lots of rubbish out there, but essentially it was considered to be something that'll help you have a baby. Well, what happens, of course, is that, let's read it. Reuben went out in the days of wheat harvest and he found mandrakes in the field in verse 14 and he brought them unto his mother Leah. Well, Rachel saw it. Word got out. Give me, I pray thee, of thy son's mandrakes. I need to have a child. That's my only hope. And she says to her, is it a small matter that thou hast taken my husband? So obviously Jacob's no longer anywhere near Leah. And so the worst thing can happen. She hires her husband. by giving Rachel these mandrakes. That's low, isn't it? That's getting to the bottom. I've got to use my son to go and find me something that I can sell to you to get my husband back. Essentially, that's what they were doing. So it's getting pretty low. Well, so then Leah has these. Just go skip back a bit. Come back, Bertie. That's it. Leah has these couple of more sons, and again she is very self-centered when she has these. But she's very sad as well at this point in time, with Issachar and Zebulun. And of course, she finally has Dinah, the only known daughter of Israel. It's a sad situation, isn't it? I mean, they're sisters. Sisters of all, you know, of anyone, they really should get along. They should be happy together. They're sisters. But this has become so sad. And then they, you know, what about their children? How are their children going under this circumstance? Is this the type of environment to bring up children to the Lord? There's no wonder they were truly dysfunctional. So there's a warning in that, isn't there? Don't speak ill of others, family or anyone. And definitely don't speak ill in front of our children of others. It's the wrong message. It's the wrong thing to do. We shouldn't be doing that. And what's Jacob thinking about now? Well, he's thinking about getting out of there. Is he thinking about his mother's people now, like he was in our last class? Let's turn over to verse 22, because finally, and maybe the mandrakes helped here, I don't know. Finally, Rachel is blessed with a son. And she calls his name Joseph. We all know about Joseph, don't we? So Rachel has her first son, Joseph, or the increaser, or to add, which is what that means. And here we see a rare glimpse of the spiritual Rachel. Someone who acts in a completely different way to previously. And so let's have a look at it. It says that God remembered. Now that's interesting, isn't it? There's God's hand again. God remembered. And God hearkened to her, which implies that perhaps she was even praying. Perhaps. And opened her womb. The word for God here is the word Elohim, perhaps because that's where she really understood him. But then in the next verse she says, God hath taken away my reproach, still using the word Elohim. But in verse 24, after naming the child, look at her response. Yahweh shall add to me a son. She uses his Yahweh name. She's moved to see Yahweh's hand in her life. So we have to have this crippling situation, 7 years, and Jacob and Rachel were really not suited. They were not like-minded, but for some reason, Rachel had Jacob under a spell. He was blinded in love, and love is blindness. And if he only stopped for a minute to look into the eyes of Leah, her tender eyes, perhaps he would have seen something different. And so Jacob's being brought along this journey to understand more about his mother and to understand that all that is good about Rebekah, his mother, did not come from Syria. But Jacob had a problem, didn't he? He's here. He's been blessed with a large brood of brats. Is that what your mum called you, Tim? And for his troubles, he now has 4 wives, but he hasn't got anything to feed them with. He's got nothing. He's been working for 20 years for a cruel master, and he's made this master rich. But you know what? He wants to go home. Jacob wants to go home, back to his father. But he's got nothing to feed his family with. He's got nothing to take home. And so God then proceeds to bless Jacob. And Genesis 30, verse 25 to 43, explains how that happens. And we're not going to go through all of this tonight, but let's go through some of it. And you know what? It brings us back to another very likeable character, Laban. We're going to talk a little bit about Laban for a second. So, verse 20, this is the type of man Laban was. He wasn't godly at all. The only gods he cared about were his idols. And they were all things like money and wealth and status. But here's the type of character that he was. In verse, let's pick up in verse 26 of chapter 30. Jacob goes to Laban and says, "Give me my wives and my children for whom I have served." Now notice those words, served. Served is all through this. "So I have served thee, and let me go, for thou knowest my service which I have done thee." And this is Laban, this is him. Laban said unto him, "Oh, I pray thee, if I've found favour in your eyes," yeah, right, found favour in your eyes, "if I've found favour, tarry, for I have learned by experience that," and he uses the word Yahweh, yeah, right, "that Yahweh has blessed me for your sake." You're right, he has blessed you. He's given you everything, and I've got nothing but troubles. And he says, "Well, why don't you just tell me what you want, and I'll give it to you." So Jacob goes on to say, "All right, well, this is the plan. I'm going to go through the herds tomorrow, and I'm going to pick out all the spotted, the ring-straked, and all that. You know the story. And I'm going to take them out, and they're going to be mine," because he knew that they were the minority of the herd anyway. "And that can be my payment, and that'll be good." And guess what Laban says? Well, in verse 34, he says, "Well, let it be according to your word. No worries." Shook hands on it. Look what he did in the next two verses. He removed that day the he-goats, all the breeders. He went through and he took all the spotted, the speckled, the ring-straked out immediately. And he sent them 3 days away, so that they couldn't mingle with Jacob's herd. That's the type of deal he does. He's happy to shake hands as long as it's in his favour. And this is why Jacob's now got to get out of there. And so despite all of that, though, the rest of that chapter, it shows to us that God's really in control of this situation, because God then goes on to bless him regardless. God blesses him, and Jacob puts his faith in God. And you know what? Once Laban had seen that God had still blessed him, despite his best efforts to stop that, have a look what it says in chapter 31. Jacob, in verse 2, "Jacob beheld the countenance of Laban, and behold, it was not toward him as before." Cain once had a countenance towards his brother Abel. That's the same word. Well, this is the sort of thing that was happening here. All of a sudden, Laban didn't like Jacob. Only because he became wealthy himself, but not Laban anymore. So, verse 3, God says, and this is when I think I mentioned last class, God actually visits those in need, in desperate need. Well, this is one of those occasions, because Jacob obviously hitting rock bottom here. He wants to go home, and God says, "You've got to get out and move and go, because this man Laban, he's got it in his mind to do you harm." And so Jacob then talks to his wives and his family, and he says, explains the situation. "We really need to leave." And you know what? This is the first time that you'll see Rachel and Leah actually on the same page, actually talking, actually deciding something together in agreement. Verse 14. Because they can start to see their father for who he really is. "And Rachel and Leah answered and said unto him, Is there yet any portion or inheritance for us in our father's house? Are we not counted of him strangers? For he hath sold us, and hath quite devoured also our money. Verse 16, for all the riches which God hath taken from our father, that is ours, and our children's. Now then, whatsoever God hath said unto thee, do. They agreed on something. And I find that quite amazing. Now, I've put on the slide there about Laban. Down the bottom there, you probably take those notes away with you, but there's a really good link back to Jeremiah around this idea of service and serving and serving. Because one day, as we know, Jacob is typical of Israel. One day God says that they will no longer be ruled by those who serve them. And this is also typical of that day when he leaves. And so we see then that under the cover of darkness, they slip away. Now they can start to see their father in a different light. But you know what? There's something still, even though they were together on this situation, Rachel and Leah, even though they were seemingly looking like, oh, maybe things are patching up, maybe they are the same. Maybe, you know, Rachel's starting to use the Yahweh name and, you know, Leah's starting to not when she's under pressure. Maybe, you know, maybe. There is something still different about Rachel. Have a look what happens in chapter 31 and at verse 19. Before they slip out under the cover of darkness, what happens? What happens? Verse 19. And so Laban went out to shear his sheep. And what does Rachel do? She has stolen the images that were her father's. What are these images? What were images? Isn't that cameras, is that back in those days? It wasn't that type of image. It was, if you have a look in the margin, I don't know if yours says this, but it's the word teraphim. Ever heard of the teraphim in the Bible? Do you know, it doesn't actually say, because later on we won't deal with it in this tonight, but Jacob gets rid of all the idols out of the camp before he moves into the land again. Interesting to see that teraphim were all through the history of Israel after this point in time. You'll see it in Judges and Samuel, Ezekiel, Hosea. It all talks about this. So it's an idol. And it was an idol that was so precious and must have been worth a lot of money that Laban chases hard. And that was probably the main reason he chased so hard. He made it sound like, oh, my poor baby daughters, and I want to, you know, oh, I never had a chance to kiss them goodbye. You have a look. You don't believe me? Let's have a look. Let's see what it says. Come over in verse 34. Have a look at this. Now, this is when Laban has caught up. He's caught up to him with a great band of men. Why would you need a band of men unless you're thinking to do harm? Catches up to him, and verse 34 says Rachel had taken the images, and this is Laban all over again. Rachel's just got the measure of Laban, because, you know, apples don't fall far from the tree. And she put them in the camel's furniture, in the bag, on the camel's saddle, and she sat on them. And it says that Laban searched all the tent and found them not. That word search there, just to give you more emphasis on the word, it says in my margin, felt about. Right? He didn't just have a quick look. He felt everywhere, try and find this precious thing. So it must have been small enough. Right? And what happened? And she said to her father, let it not displease my lord that I cannot rise up before thee. In other words, I can't hop off the camel. Why? For the custom of women is upon me. And he searched but found not the images. The custom of women. Her monthly cycle. She didn't want to... She's smart. She was just like Laban. You're not getting me off this camel because, you know, women's issues. Oh, okay. No worries. She can deceive just as much. So there's something a little bit different about her, yeah? So then we come down to of course, the episode, we move over to chapter 33, of when, you know, Laban, I will say this, that Laban finally leaves. So after that, that actual episode, and Jacob in verse 36 right through to verse 45 or 42, just basically tells Laban what he thinks of him. He says, you're evil. You need to go and leave us alone. What have I done to deserve all of this? And so Laban resigns to the fact that he's lost the most precious thing in his life, his idol, not his children. And he, in verse 55, it says that he rose up early and he kissed his family goodbye and he returned to his place. And that's the difference between Laban and his daughters. His daughters didn't return back there. Laban was like his father Nahor and like his grandfather Haran, who couldn't keep going. Couldn't leave Syria. Syria was his life. But Abraham didn't. Abraham left through faith. And here we've got Jacob, through faith, is going back. And he's taking his wives, his children, rightly so, with him. All got their individual issues and problems, but God works with them all. And now we come over to verse 33. We're very, very quickly understand where Jacob's mind is at the moment, with who, which one of his wives he favours most. It's funny, isn't it? Kids like to know who they're, you know that my little kids, I've got one boy, one girl, and they say, who's your favourite? Standard answer, well, you're my favourite girl and you're my favourite boy, so it makes it easy. But you know, my mum and dad had 8 kids, so I've never put them through that pain because I'm a perfect child. But you know, I always knew I was the most favoured one, of course. But anyway, enough of that. But here we come in chapter 33 of Genesis, and this is when Jacob is so scared he's about to meet Esau, so worried about this. And we see a little insight into what Jacob thought. You see verse 1, it says, and he divided the children up unto Leah and Rachel and the two handmaids. Who does he put first? Well, the ones he doesn't really care about as much, does he? So he puts the handmaids first with theirs. And then he puts Leah first after that. And then, of course, Rachel he holds back with Joseph. You can understand. He's been in love with Rachel all his life. But you can still see here that that is the case in his mind. Well, moving along then to... I'll probably need to skip over to this one. We're getting close towards the end. This is my second to last slide. Rachel's sons. Well, this is her second son, Benjamin. So let's come across to chapter 35. This is the next time we pick up in this story. And it's a very sad section, isn't it? We come to the moment of Benjamin's birth. We always know that Benjamin's the last of the children. You know why? Because you break it up. Ben, jam in. It's like the last one. Oh, no, don't worry. Sorry. That's how I remembered it anyway. I'm a bit strange. So anyway, coming to this story though. So we have a very sad moment again in Jacob's life. The context is that they've been living near Shechem, where Simeon and Levi, of course, have caused such grievous harm, terrible, to innocent people, didn't they? They did a terrible thing to these innocent people. I know there was terrible things that happened to their sister Dinah. And it's all for another time. We won't go into that. But the interesting thing to point out was that they did so using deception, just like their father, like their grandfather. They used deception. Plenty of Laban in their blood too. Jacob is told by God to leave Shechem and go to Bethel. So this is the context of this. And so Jacob does this with his family. And we have this very sad occasion of Rachel's death. We find in verse 16 that the journey from Bethel, that they journeyed from Bethel, and when they were but a little way, it says, from Ephrath, or Ephrath is Bethlehem, it says, that she didn't quite make Bethlehem, and she started to have this child. Verse 17, we find the midwife is encouraging her. during this hard labour, fear not, you will have this son also. And notice that she's perhaps picking up on Rachel's words from her last son Joseph, which was to say, God will add to me another. The midwife tries to encourage her by getting her to focus on the boy and not focusing on herself. Focus on someone else for once. But look at what happens when the boy's born. As she's dying, she calls him Benoni, son of my sorrows. And again, she's thinking of herself. Then the boy's father names him Benjamin, son of my right hand, which is typical, of course, of Jesus Christ's birth. Why does it not choose to name Jacob in verse 18? In fact, this is the only son whom he names. All the others were named by their mothers, but not the son of his right hand. I believe that's deliberate. Jesus was named by his father. But the glaring difference with Rachel, of course, is that she didn't quite make it to Bethlehem, whereas Mary did, and Joseph did. And there Mary gave birth, and she didn't die because she was beloved of God. Micah 5 verse 2 says, "But thou, Bethlehem Ephratah, though thou be little among the thousands of Judah, yet out of thee shall come forth unto us a ruler in Israel." Sadly, however, this woman, Rachel, who again is confirmed in Matthew 2, verse 18, quoting from Jeremiah 31, verse 15, as being typical of natural Israel, lacked faith, the faith that she needed. And another ironic lesson, a poetic lesson perhaps, after yelling at her husband, "Give me children or else I die," she dies in the event of just that, giving birth to a boy. And even though natural Israel lacks faith, and that they have journeyed for so long and still haven't learnt the lesson that they should put their trust in Yahweh, even though they still look to the needs of themselves and remain in the land as if it were according to their own strength, do you know what? God still loves them. And Micah 4 teaches us that. God still loves them. And they will have a place with him in eternity. Just like Jacob still loved Rachel despite her many flaws. And so, of course, we come to the end of our time with Leah and Rachel. And Leah continues to live on. Finally, with Jacob no longer being distracted by his sister Leah, Rachel. Imagine what that must have been like. We're not told much about it, are we? In fact, we're not told anything about it. But we must have understood that Leah would have taken charge of looking after Rachel's boys. Surely. After all, they turned out to be wonderful boys, didn't they? Wonderful boys. Great children. You know, let's turn over to our final look at this story. Come over to Genesis 49. We hear about Leah one final time. At this point in time, Jacob, now we just skipped over a few pages, right? But that is a big chunk of history in Jacob's life. When you consider all the issues with Joseph and his brothers and all that sort of stuff, and the famine, and now he's in Egypt and he's on his deathbed. And what does he request on his deathbed? Well, Jacob now on his deathbed explains where he wants his sons to bury him. He could have chosen to be buried outside of Bethlehem, where his first love, Rachel, was buried. But he didn't choose to be buried there. So let's have a look where. So verse 29, he charged them, and he said unto them, "I am to be gathered to my people. Bury me with my fathers in the cave that is in the field of Ephron the Hittite, in the cave that is in the field of Machpelah, which is before Mamre, the one that Abraham had bought and so on. Now, I want you to point out that that word Machpelah has a very interesting meaning, and it's a very strong meaning in this whole scenario. We need to understand this meaning, because the meaning really is very simple. It means folded together. Let's have a look what he goes on to say. I find this a little emotional when I think about the struggles that he's had with all of these times. But in verse 31, it says this: "There they buried Abraham and Sarah." And notice these two words: "his wife." We know Sarah was Abraham's wife, but it's in there. "There they buried Isaac and Rebekah, his wife. And there I buried Leah." And I think in those times, Jacob has realised who she really was. Because Leah is typical of faithful Israel. And Jacob learned that fact along the way, as he himself saw the providence of God working in his life and in the life of his family. So what an amazing story. What an amazing story. And it's been wonderful going back through this. I'm going to finish with this last slide. I'm not going to explain it. It's there, pretty easy to explain. But I will finish with these words: that God is working to refine all of us so that we're fit for his kingdom. He's working at what goes on inside, just like he did with all of these characters. It's his great pleasure to give us the kingdom. He wants us to work on our inner person. But with the knowledge that God is working and walking in our personal journeys, we ought to remember these lessons.